Hello, and welcome to Blood, Sweat, and Careers, the podcast where we discuss multi-hyphenates, dig deep into hustle culture, and find hobbies to social distance ourselves from our crazy uncles. We're your hosts, Mallory, Austin, and Catherine.
Yay, we're here for episode 3. I'm Austin Mark, celebrity chef and fitness model.
And I'm Mallory Kaufman, podcast critic, zucchini bread savant, and begrudging snow shoveler.
And I'm Catherine Peach, pet groomer and professional imposter.
Woot! So, welcome back again. We're doing this little multi-hyphenate podcast, and every week we're going to try to make this a little bit easier and describe to you what a multi-hyphenate is. So, Catherine, let's try it again. What is a multi-hyphenate?
Well, we're taking a term that has origins in Hollywood. So the singer hyphen dancer hyphen actor archetype, and then expanding that concept to describe our modern lives where we're claiming for ourselves what it is to pursue a lot of different interests, including passions and hobbies, and then figure out how to turn them all into a career.
That's the thing we're doing. So every week we like to highlight a multi-hyphenate, and we are trying not to have only people who are actor, dancer, DJs, because frankly, there are more of those and we kind of want to spotlight this other side of it. But so I chose this week, Augustin Burroughs, who you guys probably know from Running with Scissors. Have you, either of you read?
I'm familiar with the book. I actually haven't read it yet, though.
And I've only seen the movie, but I really enjoyed it, so.
So I read Running with Scissors when I was, I think, in high school, and I loved it. I have the shortest attention span, and I'm not a fast reader, so I love short stories. And that's usually what he writes, is short form kind of anecdotes. So I have recently been reading his book, Dry, rereading it, and it's about him being an alcoholic, but it's also about him being in the ad world, because he started out at an ad agency, became an award-winning copywriter, ended up writing Running with Scissors, and then he co-produced the movie, and he's written tons of books.
And produced a couple movies, I think. The Wolf at the Table, I was reading about him, and it sounds like he helped get that into movie form as well.
Oh, yeah. I didn't realize that he'd also done... I knew that he wrote the book, but I didn't realize that that was even a movie. So when I was rereading Dry, I was noticing that he's talking about going into this ad agency at 19 and getting this job as a high school dropout. And he didn't seem to have like the same type of fear that I have with every job that I go into. I don't know if you guys relate to this at all, but like I have this usually a super low confidence going into a new job field. And he just seemed to like totally flourish at it. And I thought that it perfectly related to our theme this week of imposter syndrome.
Oh boy, yeah, I could go, and we will go on about the fear. It's almost like going to school for the first time in the fall, except without the fun trapper keepers and like fresh pencils. You know, it's just like the adult shame and self-loathing, maybe, or is that just me?
Check, check.
No, it's everyone.
Yeah, no, I think that there's definitely something to be said about the spotlight of someone who does not have the imposter syndrome, because it feels almost ubiquitous, maybe amongst the three of us, and hence the reason we wanted to talk about it. But it's also hilarious realizing that a lot of people that you think would never feel this way do. And then perhaps the people that you assume should, a 19-year-old high school dropout, don't. And kind of like parsing through that, why? Why are we sometimes feeling like an imposter and sometimes not?
Absolutely. And so we found out that imposter syndrome wasn't even coined a word until 1978 by two American psychologists. It's Pauline Clance and Suzanne Imes. But it's essentially, and I'd love to hear what it means to each of you, but it feels like that you're a fraud, or it can manifest in actually multiple ways. I feel like the feeling like a... how did I get to this place? I can't believe I fooled everybody, but also really devaluing your worth, which is something that I've had to work in my life really hard on, of, you know, not undermining my own accomplishments, which leads into the, how do you not undermine your own experience or expertise when you feel like everybody else in the room has something more important to say?
I found a really fun graphic. It looks like someone drew it on a napkin, but I literally Googled the phrase imposter syndrome and this popped up. And it resonated with me and feels like it might be the most succinct way to define what I see imposter syndrome as. And it was the Venn diagram of making something look easy with discarding its value. And in the middle where the two circles overlap is the imposter syndrome. And I just thought that sometimes is so me, like either I'm gonna win and I'm great at it and thus I embrace it and I want people to know I'm good at this thing, or I know I'm going to lose, or I don't feel confident in this area and I maybe just don't even see the value in it. And kind of that middle ground area where I'm either not one or the other and feeling like, oh my God, is this a really important task I should have nailed for work? Or is this something that maybe I don't care about? I'm just over it. But yeah, well, Austin, what do you think? How would you kind of define the term?
Yeah, I feel like I have experienced imposter syndrome throughout my entire career. Like I started doing makeup from a job where I was literally answering phones off-site for golf courses and met a woman who was like, hey, you want to work at a makeup counter? And I mean, for sure, the imposter syndrome there of like, okay, now it's my job to put makeup on people and I have no clue what I'm doing, but someone thought I could. But also as my career has progressed and I've gone on to bigger and better things, every time I start in something new, I'm like, I have no idea why they chose me to do this.
Well, I love that because I feel like it's so important to find that like ally, that supporter that says, hey, this is possible. And I know, like, at least as a kid, that was the biggest reason why I went after writing, is because, you know, I got that like dose of dopamine of like, hey, people like when I do this and, you know, I'm getting that positive feedback. So sometimes I wonder if like, what if people had encouraged something else? Would I have gone after that path as well or instead?
One of the kind of expanded thoughts that I had when I know, Catherine, you mentioned how this term originated. And in another article I was reading, kind of substantiating that same study, it started explaining the idea as like an intellectual phonyism and being most common a feeling actually in successful people or successful women, as it were. It cited women specifically, but that almost feels like the tension here, right? So like you're feeling this sense of phonyism maybe most acutely when you're actually like achieving and becoming successful or potentially from the outside looking in are successful. And perhaps before you've reached success, understand what that means or have a sense of success is when you maybe aren't necessarily experiencing it. Hence the multi-hyphenate we're shining a spotlight on, like maybe his kind of lack of fear or his confidence kind of was sourced out of a not knowing that he could fail yet.
I learned from a very young age that failure was always an option. So yeah. I always knew that I could. And speaking of like being at the height of your success and still feeling this, and I also read that minorities and women tend to feel imposter syndrome more acutely. But Maya Angelou actually said, after publishing her 11th book, that every time she wrote another one, she'd think to herself, uh-oh, they're going to find out now. I've run a game on everybody.
I love that.
And so like,
I mean, if she can think that,
like, right?
Internationally revered Maya Angelou also feels this way. So that's a really important distinction to make, is that it isn't real for the most part. Like, it's just a feeling. We all have it. So it's super common and we're not alone in feeling it. But it truly is not reflective of the truth most of the time.
Right. It almost has to be separated from like the experience of the feeling of imposter syndrome is real and worth talking about, hence our whole hour long conversation we're going to have. But also what you're saying is that it's so separate from the outside looking in. Like when you're seeing someone's success, you're not questioning it in real time necessarily.
Yeah, such a good point.
Another woman, a very powerful woman and woman of color that I feel like I've heard speak to this imposter syndrome is Michelle Obama. I recently listened to her memoir, which Austin, it was on a trip to visit you and your husband. And it had the most wonderful effect on my drive, which was like a 5-hour drive, not only because you're listening to her voice, which is soothing for all the right reasons and takes me to a place and time where I would much rather be, but also because she's so raw and so real, and definitely throughout the book, I think alludes to the imposter syndrome, not only in her younger years. I think the quote that we pulled was something about, am I too loud, too much, dreaming too big, but also talks about it when she's literally the first lady in the White House, feeling very much like she wasn't either sure she should be there or how she got there, and kind of working through all of those feelings and finding her voice.
Well, I think the Michelle Obama quote, especially about being, about saying, am I too loud? Am I too much? Am I dreaming too big? I think that is another interesting facet of these feelings aren't always real, but a lot of these, you know, voices in our heads or these self-doubt things that we say to ourselves are definitely ingrained in us in a societal way. I'm sure that Michelle Obama was told that she was too loud or too much or whatever as a young person of color who, by someone else's estimation, shouldn't have been allowed to take up the space that she was taking up. A lot of these voices in our heads are things that we've heard over the years or throughout our childhood, and it's still really hard to get over those things.
Absolutely. And I mean, I can definitely relate to the, like, am I too loud? Am I taking up too much space? And, you know, it's almost reassuring to hear that you can be at that level, be Michelle Obama, while you still have those doubts. Maybe it's a step towards realizing that everybody has it, and you can really kind of start shutting those voices out. I keep hoping that I'm going to get to an age or a place where that just isn't a concern anymore. And I'm still waiting. It hasn't arrived.
After finishing the book, I have a feeling we'll all be waiting. It just feels like, yes, this encroachment on your sense of security and your skill set can come from anywhere and at any level. And to your point as well, Austin, of just you're hearing things and then you almost have to turn that around and spin it on its face and move in a new direction. Like, I think Maya Angelou and Michelle Obama are both wonderful examples of someone who hasn't leaned in too far to that voice in their head, or whether they felt like an imposter giving that air to anyone outside of themselves. They waited either a very long time before they admitted it and succeeded in the meantime, or didn't really clue people in along the way. So I don't know if you guys have examples that you want to speak to where this has either shown up in your life or you've maybe faked it till you made it. Kind of another similar quote I've used many times, you know, fake it till you make it type thing.
I like that you put in the outline, faked it till you maked it, which I think is a much better,
you know, keeping the tenses.
I prefer that version.
I think when I first started my business as a consultant, I worked with a lot of people that I knew or people I had been recommended to. So that felt like a much more safer space of like, oh, I know how to do this. I know either like we have people in common, or I feel like I didn't have to fake it necessarily. And then once I had either contracts end or looking for new projects, I could feel that creeping back in of like, am I qualified to be going out to businesses and trying to give my services, and do people actually care? And it hasn't been until maybe recently, and I've been doing this for now almost 2.5 years, that I just got really clear about what it is that I do like to do. But I still feel like even trying to get the kind of rates that I want, or, you know, like living wage that feels good and without having to overtax myself, I still can feel that like, oof, like, do I have the authority to be able to charge X amount? But I guess the more I think about it, you know, if I wait around till somebody gives me authority, then I'm probably going to be waiting for a really long time.
The authority fairy has a long list. That's
right. Yeah. I have absolutely been in that place. When I started my business at the beginning of this year, It was sort of this, like, you know, late night texting conversation that I was having with my now business partner that we both got really amped up about this thing. And we were both so excited, but I don't think either of us were necessarily ready to, like, full jump in. But the way that the timing worked out was that I think it was literally within 2 weeks. It could have even been less. But in a very short period of time after we came up with the name, she came in contact with a woman who hooked her up with a contact who put us on a preferred vendors list and invited us to be part of this showcase. It was a wedding showcase at the, I won't say where it was. It was a wedding showcase. Sure. And they were like, so we're putting together our preferred vendors. We will choose you. And it was sort of like a sight unseen thing. Like, they just heard that we knew what we were doing and asked us to be part of this thing. And we were going to be the only people providing hair and makeup services to people who were getting married at this venue. And I was like, well, this is super cool. Like, I wasn't expecting it, but that's great. And then the woman contacted me on the Friday before we had to do this thing on the Monday. And she was like, so all I need is your high-res logo and your website and your Instagram and a bunch of professional photos of the work that you guys do.
Oh, is that all?
And I was like, oh, I absolutely have all of that. And, like, hung up the phone and was like, I am a full-ass fraud. Like, this woman is going to know that I don't have any of these things. But it was actually, like, the motivation that I got from that. I am so desperate for her to not find out who I really am that I will for sure teach myself how to make a logo and how to make a website and put together all of these promotional materials. And I literally did it over the weekend. Like, my business partner was doing real work and I was like, I got this, girl. And totally, like, you know, did it on the fly. And I did it well enough that no one called it out, and I still felt a little bit of a fraud afterwards, but I was also super proud of, oh, I'm like a capable adult person with internet access. I can figure out most things.
Right. There's a YouTube out there to teach you how to do something.
And there was.
TGI YouTube, for sure.
And I also, having COVID happen and losing clients and then all of a sudden being met with this needs to happen. I need to get over the fact that I feel funny about what I might need to charge in a modern day or have to, like, sell myself, which is strange enough since literally that's what I've been doing in one form or the other, whether that's through, I mean, maybe it hasn't always been myself. It's much more comfortable if I'm selling a brand or a client or an idea. But, you know, having to make new income, I mean, that sure lit a fire under my ass to just be like, all right, let's figure this out. Let's talk to other people in the industry and see what makes sense for me based on making a living wage and having fun, like taking something that feels good and not taking a job just because I need to buy more groceries, I guess would be the correct term.
Yeah, I mean, part of me is listening to this and it's like, absolutely. I agree with everything you guys have just said. And then without wanting to feel like I'm oversharing or overthinking it, sometimes I feel like this has shown up in my life in the opposite way, where when I'm new at something, I feel like I can ask all the questions. I can just be the new kid, whether it's a new job or a new skill or whatever. I am just able to ask away. And then all of a sudden, it's when you turn the corner into, like, you should know what you're doing, whether it's you've been promoted or you're taking on a role in a new way and you've spoken to all of the different skills that you may have had and feeling like now you have to produce, now you have to show up. Kind of, I guess, what you were alluding to, Austin, too, with just feeling like you've got this opportunity and now this woman just assumed all these elements about your business. And that's such a fun feeling on the one hand, because clearly she just had established you in her mind through what she knew to be at a level that maybe you didn't realize you were at, even though you were, because you clearly accomplished all the checked all the boxes she was asking for. But I think that's when it sets in for me sometimes, is really when I've rounded the corner from being, you know, oh, I'm just new on the job, 3 months, let me ask all the questions, into like, I've been here long enough, I should know this, or I want people to feel secure in my knowledge, but also sometimes feeling like, do I actually know this, or do I have the skills, or, oh my God, was I fooling them this whole time? And it can start to creep in almost in this backdoor way where all of a sudden I'm like, wait, why do I feel like an imposter?
Well, and not to like pile it on the feelings that you already have about yourself, but like, I'm honestly not surprised to hear that you have found yourself in that situation, because for people who don't know Mallory, more than anyone I've ever met, has this ability to like walk into a room of people she does not know and sell herself on a job that she has never worked before and have them be like, yeah, you're the girl. The jobs that you have worked and the opportunities that you have created for yourself by showing up and being like, I don't know anything about working at a place like this, but I thought it would be super fun. And then being like, yes, it would be. You're hired.
Ooh, yeah. Oh my God, you just exposed me for the fraud I am.
You are a fraud, but also like the most charming person that I know. And that's how you get jobs doing wild things, or just calling up and being like, oh, I started a PR business because I have no problem in public or relating to people.
No, but I think you're touching on something else that was a piece of inspiration, at least for me, behind this topic, which is a great book called The Confidence Code. I'm going to need to Google who wrote it. I read it so long ago, but I know I've talked to you, Catherine, about this. And what was resonant throughout the entire book was this question of, is confidence born entity? Like, are you born into the world just with some confidence and or no confidence? You know, that's kind of the way it is. Or is it something that gets built over time? Or is it fluid? And I think by the end of the book, you realize it's all of those things, right? So someone can just have innate confidence. They can just feel all of a sudden like, hey, I'm walking into the ad agency. I'm 19 years old. And I am meant to be here. Or they can lack, just be scraping the barrel for confidence. Or it can also be something that's built over time. And I don't know, I don't want to necessarily imply that imposter syndrome and confidence have to be two sides of the same coin. I think they can exist separately and together at the same time. But I think that book is another wonderful resource and another interesting way of kind of looking at this space. And it definitely genders the conversation in the book. It talks a lot about male confidence and maybe even, to your point, Austin, societal pressures or ways society kind of molds people, and men, generally speaking, are bolstered by confidence in a way that women often aren't.
Yeah. I mean, I was just listening to the phrase today, like, I wish I had the confidence of a mediocre white man, which still working on it. But yeah, I mean, they can take over the world and literally have.
As a mediocre white man, I can absolutely.
Triple underscore. Yeah. Never. You couldn't even claim that title if you wanted to. Sorry. Well, much more than mediocre.
Well, thank. I think a big part of this conversation is the faking of the confidence that we often have to do when we go into a new situation, whether it's work or social or whatever. And I mean, I know I've definitely had to sort of almost create a persona of a more confident person as my career has gone on, because I've had to walk into these rooms where I felt like I really wasn't necessarily a part of, or that I shouldn't have been a part of what was going on. And just in the past couple of years, I've really tried to make some serious steps to create a personality that is sort of like the best parts of me, I think, that conveys a confidence that I hope to attain. And through that, I generally do sort of get to that place. And I've kind of come up with some tricks to sort of make myself believe that I am the thing that I'm saying that I am.
I'm going to say, I'd love to hear what either even one trick that each of you have, since I'm constantly impressed by both of you and the confidence that you can bring into a room. Granted, you know, I think that's just also your wonderful personalities, but I'd be curious, do you do anything to psych yourself up? Or like, Mallory, what do you tell yourself if you have to say anything? Of like, I am ready for this job. I am the person.
That's an amazing question. And I think in conjunction with what Austin said earlier, has me literally almost speechless, which is almost because I'm never speechless. You guys know. But I feel like there's an anxiety that is constant in my existence sometimes, where I'm like always thinking my wheels are turning. But then there's, on the other side of that, almost a silence that has to come over you. And you have to your point, Austin, either muster the courage to be all the best parts of yourself, or I think for me, it's almost quiet the noise and just lean into a steady focus on whatever it is that I want. And I think a lot of times in my life, I'm allowing the noise to overcome and question and have imbalance and making me wonder, you know, do I want red or white wine? I don't know. Oh my God, it's the whole thing. And there's the times I feel the most confident, or when I feel like I can do this, is when I just tell everybody in my head to shut up and go forward. And I think that's in job interviews, that's in what I was describing earlier, in situations at work where I'm like, oh my God, should I do this? Should I call? Because my go-to with anything is I want input. I like collaboration. I love the like community of a project, but I also feel like that's my downfall at times, when I'm like feeling as if I'm not going to be the one to make the final say. And I think lately it's been trying to more often than not just say, everybody shut up, including, you know, the people in my head, nobody outside. And like, let's do this. You can make the choice. And if you truly cannot make the choice, make a choice and then ask if it was the right one. But don't act like you don't know, because you do. You have enough skill, knowledge, resources to figure it out for yourself. I don't know. Austin, how would you kind of interplay with the times when you've been your most confident self or your least imposterous?
So... least
in, is that a word?
Yeah, it is now. So for me, like, I had sort of a big transition about 3 years ago. I had been working for the same company for almost 9 years, and to not put too many specifics on it, I was working for this company as an independent contractor, and as I was progressing in my career with them and proving myself more and more and more, I started to get more responsibility placed on me, to a point where I was doing the job functions of someone who had like a corporate job title. And then when I went in finally to just interview for the job that I was already functionally performing, the feedback that I got was, you don't look like the person we want to hire for this job.
Oof.
Which was really devastating and low confidence. Can't relate. I was told that I wasn't good looking enough to have this job.
Is that even legal? And
WTF.
It turns out in California that the unattractive are not a protected class.
Oof, ain't that true?
Yeah. However, so, I mean, it was such a surreal moment that I was like, are you kidding me? Like, this is essentially a sales job and I'm killing it already, but you want a spokesmodel?
Which, honestly, would that even sell more?
No.
I feel like if you were like way cuter than me, I might not want to buy anything from you because I wouldn't want to talk to you.
The whole thing was ridiculous.
Yeah, such a good point.
But I basically walked away from that situation knowing that it was stupid, but that if I was ever going to find myself in a situation again where they were looking for someone who had like an it factor, that I was going to have to produce one in like a way that was more apparent to a complete stranger. So I made some like big changes about how I present myself in work situations. And I'm glad that this is not a visual medium where people can see me right now because I look like trash. So anyway, long story short, I started really like dressing the part for the jobs that I was looking for. And now in any work situation, I am constantly dressed to the nines. Like, I carry a large handbag. I wear jewelry. I'm a fancy, fancy gay. And it absolutely has opened doors for me. And it also gives me this confidence boost when I walk into a room where I need to convince someone that I'm the guy that they want. And, you know, to be like a total douchebag about it. If I'm dressed better than you, it creates a power dynamic that allows me to present myself in a way that is more confident and more charming than I think that I am.
I mean, I feel like I've used fashion or how I've presented myself in the same way. There's something so yeah, like you said, powerful about being able to walk into a room, whether that's for like a job interview. And living in Colorado, I think people give me a hard time of like, oh, you didn't just get off of a mountain? Why aren't you wearing, you know, insert something about Patagonia? But there is, it's really nice to be able to have like that blazer or almost like a protective armor that feels like, hey, I really value myself and you should take me seriously.
Oh yeah. RuPaul said in his masterclass, like, if you want to make more money, wear a suit. And I definitely feel that way. Wearing a full suit is definitely like a protective armor of, I know what I'm doing. I was smart enough to put this together and show up here today. And it really, like, it works.
No, I think it's funny. I mean, tangential slightly, but I think what you're saying resonates for me in particular with the experience of being all virtual and working remotely and trying to kind of reestablish my maybe routine. Like, I think on a day-to-day level with my team, I'm very comfortable in my sweatshirt, my no makeup look in our meetings. But absolutely for me, my armor is putting on makeup. And I learned that not so much through an experience of necessarily like an imposter syndrome, but absolutely through a professional kind of like crisis, if you will, where I was working at the TV station. I, as Austin can attest, would have days where I needed to be at the studio at 3:30 in the morning. And I'm not a morning person. I remain a non-morning person to this day. It's a piece of me that I'm dealing with still, but 3:30 in the morning was horrific. It wasn't even fun. It's not like, oh, stay up late enough and go to work. It was just this awful time to get to work. And for probably the first 4 months of working that shift, I would show up with no makeup, with just kind of like the bare minimum and get to work. And then all of a sudden it occurred to me that every day I would just be looking forward to my nap. Like I was literally just operating for the first half of my workday as if I was like going to be able to go back to sleep, just operating as if I was going to be able to go back to bed. And it occurred to me that that's an absolutely fraudulent way to be operating in a work day. Like nobody gets, I mean, at the TV station, you do get breaks. I did have a napping break, so to speak. It was my lunch break at 7 a.m. So yeah, I took a nap, but it was also setting me up for this weird sense of failure on the job where I would just feel tired and not present. And all of a sudden I decided I would get to work, check my email, and then spend about 20 minutes getting ready in the bathroom, do my hair, do my makeup, and just look like a presentable person. And it, honest to God, you guys, changed my whole, I swear, like not to be dramatic, it feels like life. Because from there forward, I realized a routine like that, whether it's getting ready, doing your hair, doing your makeup, washing your face, taking a shower, I don't know, pick your routine. Maybe you guys have one you want to talk about too. But it feels like all of a sudden I could step into this professional space. And when I had not allowed myself to have that routine, I definitely felt distracted or not present. I don't know quite if I was feeling like an imposter, but I was certainly not feeling like a go-getter.
Well, and I'm sure both sides of that are really important, that doing it for yourself and doing it for other people. You have to put yourself in that headspace to feel successful and feel useful in your job. And then what you're projecting to other people is also really affecting their perception of you. My parents tell this story all the time of there was a guy who worked with my dad who was like an architect or a designer of some kind, and he was talented, but sort of like a middle of the road producer at what he was doing. And one day went out and bought a really old Cadillac and got a used Rolex and started wearing like a full safari outfit with a safari hat. And like,
what's triple a safari outfit? Like a, you have to describe that.
Give some detail.
Like
we've got the Rolex, we've got the car.
Like khaki shorts and a khaki button down with the round hard hat.
Oh,
a
wow.
Full like eccentric costume. And then he just tripled his prices and his business was on fire. He wasn't doing anything different in the function of his job. He just created this persona that was like, I'm a crazy, wild, successful, expensive designer. You can tell by all of the weird trappings that I carry around with me. And it absolutely worked.
Well, okay. And also for all of our listeners who have just been here this whole time, I feel like this has me thinking back to the first episode when you mentioned Paris Hilton. And honestly, I feel like she's a living example of somebody who kind of leaned very heavily into what makes me feel less like an imposter and more like somebody who can be who I want to be.
That is interesting. I mean, Dolly Parton says she basically did the same thing. She like created this character for herself that wasn't always taken seriously or was judged pretty harshly, but she was able to write these lyrics and slide in some pretty progressive thoughts that or ideas that wouldn't necessarily be accepted, or even a feminist undertone that at the time would have been considered dangerous or had been considered dangerous. But she presented it in this blonde, bubbly like package that allowed people to play to their families or whatnot. So, you know, there is something about that persona of how it can take you places, whether you are ready for them or not, which is, I think, how the imposter syndrome comes in. When we looked into it, it's really common among high achievers, creative people, students, you know, women. So, you know, there are absolutely systematic issues that make certain groups have to work harder or twice as hard just to be considered half as good or taken seriously, if ever taken seriously. But I love these ideas that you're giving of creating that persona for yourself.
Well, and I think it's also good to remember, as you said, this is something that is really common with people who are successful. And I think part of the trick is reminding yourself, I might not feel this way unless I was doing well. This is what happens when you're doing well, is that you sort of feel like you're not. So
I think the idea that this occurs when maybe you're either smart enough to know that there is failure and that's possible, or you're experienced enough to know that you don't know everything. Like, I kind of think these things work in unison, right? So you're not going to have imposter syndrome, like I've expressed, at least in my case, at the beginning, because you don't necessarily know how far the fall is or what you don't know. And as soon as you start to understand either all the things you don't know or all the ways you could potentially lose what you have, that might begin that feeling of just, okay, there's a lot at stake here, or I'm not sure I know everything. And I think, to your point, both of you just now, it's almost a good sign. Like, yeah, if you're experiencing imposter syndrome, it may mean you're actually succeeding. So go you.
So another side of this coin that we definitely wanted to cover was financial imposter syndrome, which is also like a thing that's out there. And I don't know, I've never made enough money where I didn't feel like I deserved it, but maybe you guys are super rich. But there is an element of this that we wanted to cover. Have you guys ever been in a place where you got either a promotion or you switched to a career where the money that you were earning didn't feel like it was commensurate with like where your skill set was at?
I will say that I always feel like I can have almost the I don't know if it's quite the opposite problem, but I do have a feeling that I need to check myself sometimes of being like, I should be making this amount of money. Also, I struggle with that. I'm like, is it imposter syndrome that I'm like, oh, I've been doing this for 12 years. I don't want to should myself or should all over myself. But like, I could be making this kind of money. Or is it that, you know, I have jumped around, like I go between the two, like I jumped around from different jobs, and it's not like I've been doing the same exact thing for 12 years. And so I guess that brings back into the like multi-hyphenism of how to sell myself to be like, I have all this knowledge, but it might not on paper look like, oh, I should have the corner office, even though I should definitely have the corner office. Yeah. Actually, I technically do in my house. So that's...
Me too, can't you tell?
I'm in recording from a closet, but it does have four corners.
Yeah, mine too. And a window. No, I think that's really fascinating, because I always would joke with my business partner, and joke being the lightest term to describe something very real, but money is such a hard thing for me. I don't know why. It's I'm frugal. I don't necessarily go and spend unworthy amounts of money on things, but I also have a really hard time like asking for money either from friends if they owe me or at any point. And so when I was operating a business, and that's a very critical part, the bookkeeping, you ask people, you invoice them, you need their money. It felt like, quite frankly, at the very beginning, I said to my business partner, like, this is not an area I feel comfortable. I need you to handle it. And we did, we kind of operated in that way for a while. But I think overall, my learning curve was really in understanding that that's an imposter syndrome, perhaps, or an issue that I needed to also just get over, because money is what business is, kind of the bottom line of everything. And so to be able to not only follow up on a late invoice or communicate why we're charging a certain amount of money for the skills we're offering, or explaining why we can't do something within the confines of a contract, it all at the end of the day kind of felt like it came back to the money. And so learning how to do that, I think, was a huge turning point for me.
I can definitely relate to your point about charging your worth, basically. I can't tell you how many times in my line of work that I've created an invoice, or we have a contract saying, this is what I'm charging you for the service that I'm doing. And then when it got down to it, there started to creep up all of these, oh, well, like, can you airbrush my whole back or whatever? Can you do all of these other services for me that I didn't discuss? And I know that I have a price list for those things. But then in the moment, I'm like, I would be a terrible person if I told you that the thing that you asked for cost money. It's ridiculous, because of course it costs money, particularly for like what I'm doing. Like, it's costing me the product that I have to use, and more of my time that absolutely has a value.
I think for us too, Catherine, maybe you can speak on this, in the world of communications and event, what Austin's describing is so real and so relatable, but perhaps even more intangible, right? Like, I cannot say, you're making me lose this much foundation from my bottle, or you're making me do this particular thing that will cost this amount of money. And it already is hard, as Austin's saying, but I think what can be even more crazy to think about is when you feel like, I can't substantiate why. It's just my time, or it's my idea, or it's my gumption to get the job done, that I need to charge you more for, because you asked for one thing and now you're adding two more things and it should cost you more. But I feel like, I don't know if in your work experience, you've also had this, just feeling like, oh my God, how do I ask for that more?
I can relate to that, since I feel like there's kind of two things in there going on, right? Like, it's really hard to already figure out what your market value is. And though it is getting easier, because you can do a little lot more research, you can look on like salary trackers and see if in your city, if you live in a big city, right? But it takes time and effort to be able to figure out whether, like, are you charging hourly? Are you charging a project base? And then you do all this. And then as a business person, you have to present your proposal. And, or at least that has been my experience. And so you've already done this, this, and this, and then you're waiting to see if this new client, this new account will accept it. You know, we're not talking about survival anymore. And a lot of people are like, can I charge enough? Can I make enough? Right. Does my minimum wage, it doesn't pay enough for me to live. So I have to go out and get a side hustle. And that's, you know, also part of the multi-hyphenate that I definitely want to have as part of the conversation. But once you get beyond that, it's still really hard to be like, okay, well, I'm not trying to survive anymore. So how do I justify, and to get out of that headspace? I know that's something I've struggled with, but I've always been very good about, like, I don't miss rent. I don't miss bills. I don't, I pay for my responsibilities, but there have been times where it was like, that's what I could pay for. And it wasn't, you know, I had to choose between paying for a car or paying for gas and whether I could have a nice meal or get ramen. So then as a business owner, that's, I feel like that's all compounded and that baggage is brought in. I think I've gotten better, and that's still a recent thing, of building into my proposals that basically outline what I will do and what I absolutely won't do. like, hey, if you want a blog post as well as on, you know, website copy, this is how much it's going to cost. You know, and there's always that weird in between of like, did I charge enough? Did I charge too much? Is this going to be rejected? I mean, I think that's just part of the game and part of figuring out where your sweet spot lies. It could always happen that someone says no, right? And you lose that opportunity. And I think that's part of the, where it's building on your confidence and willing, you know, I love the way you talked about, Mallory, about being a beginner, willing to be like, you know what, maybe I don't have this whole thing figured out, but I'm willing to come back and be like, you know what, actually, this is something that I didn't even know was on the table. And I know for me, that can often feel very painful, having to admit that I don't have all the answers. I think navigating what can be a very common but also difficult situation can make that imposter syndrome spike back up of like, do I have the value to say like, actually, no, that's, I can't do your hair and I can't do your makeup. We agreed on this one thing. No, I can't do a press release because no, that's not something that we agreed upon and that's not something I'm interested in doing.
I think part of me wants to ask this because of something we tugged on in the last episode, but there's also feels like a social dynamic to this. And I think as an entrepreneur or somebody who's moving through the world with many different kind of professional threads that they're pulling on, and Austin, you alluded to this actually earlier in the podcast, but when you decided to gain your confidence, grab your confidence and become the it factor, you leaned into maybe more expensive clothes, more expensive look, vibe. And I just was curious if either of you in your own kind of more social spaces have felt like you needed to present or become or provide perhaps a financial stake that either you were uncomfortable with, or maybe it's the opposite. You're doing really well and you feel like you have to act like you're not because none of your friends are.
Oh, I've absolutely been there in a social sense of, I think a lot of times because I work in an industry that's very image obsessed, even though I know on some level that the people that I am working with at any given time, like none of us are like super baller status. I don't know anyone who's clearing six figures doing what I do personally. I know there are people who exist, right? There are people who exist who are making plenty of money doing what I do. But I think a lot of times there is sort of like a keeping up with the Joneses situation of, you know, I have a few things that are fairly expensive that I have been trotting around with me for years and years. And I have, you know, one very nice handbag, but I have been in that situation of feeling like I sort of need to continue to prove that I'm doing really well financially with my peers. And it can definitely create an awkward situation of, I don't always have the money to continue to be buying new things, or even if it's just like going out for drinks after work can sometimes cost what I made at the job, but I also feel a heavy obligation to keep up with that to make sure that everybody else knows that I'm still very successful.
Obviously, I can absolutely relate to that because I think in the first year that I was living in Los Angeles, I had a very good friend who invited me to a really nice, trendy restaurant for her birthday. It was in West Hollywood. And going in, I knew, I'm like, I'm not going to be able to afford this, and had gotten into similar situations where it's like everybody goes to split the bill. You know, I'm having like a glass of wine and an appetizer, and everyone's buying like multiple cocktails and a steak. So I really had to go in with this mindset and made sure to order like right up front, hey, I'm actually not eating tonight. I'm just here for drinks. I'm here to support you because I love you, instead of making it this whole thing. And I just still remember how like the look on her face. But afterwards, I'm so glad I did, because we like, I kept my bill separate and just let the server know to make it super easy that this is my drink. I'm only going to have like one or two. And then when everybody got done, I mean, they were ordering like literally, I think the birthday girl got something like a steak. She's like, I think it would just be easier.
We'll
just split it evenly. I'm like wiping the sweat away from my brow.
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's just an important part of professionalizing in the world, networking. And I think you touch on it with drinks. I think you touch on it, Austin, with just playing the part. And I think for me, being in my 30s, it felt like I turned this corner into our friends, my friends I'm hanging out with. We're not just building a career and we're now in a career and we're all at different places. And it can be really fun to talk about. And I've never, ever felt intentionally like someone's made me feel bad, but it was just, it's very present, I think, in this way that maybe it hadn't been even 5 years ago, where there's certain levels people have achieved, be it, you know, they're now doctors or they're now lawyers or they're now some other established entity and have an income to speak of, and feeling like, you know, maybe not everyone I'm hanging out with has that, and just being aware of it and being aware of it maybe for myself, but even for other people too, trying to set up a situation so we're there to be successful.
Well, if we haven't crammed it down your throat enough, Paris Hilton says in her documentary, she's not going to feel safe until she makes $1 billion. So okay. I won't harp on it any further. But yeah, no, I think we all feel that way because we set up these expectations or these parameters in our head that really aren't based on reality. But we say these things to ourselves of, I won't feel okay until I make this much money, or I have this many things, or until I get this specific level of success that's tangible, it's not going to be okay until then. And those markers always come and go. And, you know, ultimately you have to be there for yourself and be the support system that makes you feel okay about where you are in your life, because those things don't really end up validating you the way that you expect them to. Well, I'm really glad that we got to talk about this. I know it's a subject that we've all talked about on our own and with each other. And, you know, it's a real thing and it's out there. And it does feel a little bit, it makes me feel a little bit better to know that no one who's feeling this is alone. And as we mentioned earlier, it's often a marker of actual success. So that's a little bit more comforting for me to think about, at least.
Yeah. And I think we should sound off in one sentence or less on the thing we're thinking we're going to take forward to make ourselves a boss person and maybe reject the imposter syndrome.
Yeah. I like that.
Do you want to start, Austin? Since you look the most.
Since I was not prepared for this question in any way, even though it was in the outline. Yeah. I think going forward, like, I'm going to continue putting out this more confident persona because it is something that works for me. But something that I'm going to let go of is when I'm actually in the situation, like I mentioned earlier, the situation of I'm doing the job already and suddenly more becomes expected of me. I am not just in work, but this is also why I go to therapy. But setting boundaries is like what I'm going to be doing going forward. So I guess I'm letting go of not having boundaries. How about you, Catherine?
I really love the reminder that being a beginner doesn't have to look like a place of vulnerability, and owning what I'm great at or what I'm pretty damn good at, and also what I don't know enough about and what I might need help on. Been working with a CEO who is starting a new business venture. And one takeaway that I really have is that he's upfront about, this is what I'm really good at. And I hire people around me who are really good at what they do. And I don't try to micromanage what other people excel at. So one habit that I'm absolutely throwing out the window, and it is Scorpio season now. It's all about working in dark shadows for anybody who's into astrology, and owning the things about yourself that you might not love is undermining myself especially when I say something that I'm excited about or that I've done well, and then following up with, oh, but, you know, it was just like, yeah, sure, I got this article, but, you know, I mean, maybe I already knew the editor, or yeah, sure, I did this really great thing, but, you know, it was just kind of like a team effort, and really want to let go of that.
That habit of devaluing yourself.
Exactly. This.
I feel that all.
Yeah, the very harmful habit of trying to diminish myself in some way. when I've done something that I can feel proud about.
So I talked so much. I think I already kind of shared some of mine, but I do think one of the things I want to embrace is silencing the noise and just leaning into being the answer, being the solution, knowing that I am a resource and we have Google, we have all these different ways of finding an answer. And a takeaway I had from a past career opportunity was working under a woman who had to boss around lots of people. And I use the word boss around in the best possible term. She was a boss and had men in her office all day long. And one thing she would always do is she would always offer critique, always make sure her voice was heard. And this showed up sometimes in weird ways. Like I'd give her something and she'd always have a critique for me. And I remember being like mortified, talking to a colleague, like, how could she hate this? And she was basically like, no, she came up in a time where women weren't heard. And so she always makes sure her voice is heard. This is kind of a stupid critique, but this is an example of a time where it's not great. But in general, I want to be that person as well. I want to make sure I have value add. I want to be able to show up in, I do think we've transitioned into a space where I can be quiet, I can listen, and I can add value with one sentence, which I'm not doing right now, but I could. But anyway, I want to be able to, like, you know, be the resource, be able to add value and know that I can add value. And then I think something I'm going to let go of is the idea that I do need outside validation. Like I need somebody to collaborate with. I think collaboration is a strength of mine, but it also, as I already alluded to, is a huge weakness. And it can feel like I need someone to be on the phone with me before I press send. And like, I gotta get rid of that.
I love that journey for you.
Thank you.
Thanks again, everybody, for listening to this week's episode. Please remember to rate and subscribe and share with your friends. You can find us on social media. We are at Blood Sweat Careers on Instagram. You can also send your hate mail to bloodsweatcareerspod@gmail.com. And we will see you next week.
Yay! Woo-hoo!